This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And good Friday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Two road teams win their game sixes last night, and one team staying alive with that victory, and another team ending the playoff hopes of another, as the Denver Nuggets rout the Phoenix Suns 125-100, a game in which they scored 81 points in the first half. A close game in the first quarter started to get away from Phoenix, and then it really got away from Phoenix. And that lead ended up being by 30 points, just Denver cruising. They're now in the Western Conference Finals, and more importantly for them, they get to chill out and wait to see how the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors will play out. We'll get to that game in a moment, but the other game six was earlier on Thursday, and that was the Celtics beating Philadelphia in Philadelphia, a series where the road team seems to have some level of confidence that they can win on the road, because for the Celtics, this is the second time in three games that they've won in Philadelphia, while the Sixers have taken two games in Boston, and that's where they'll go on Sunday for game seven of that series. The Celtics used a tough defensive effort in the first half, and poor shooting from Jason Tatum didn't seem to hurt them. That is the one thing about this game that I took away in the first half was Tatum couldn't hit anything. Couldn't hit a thing. Missed all of his three-point attempts. But it was because other players were able to step up, and this team that had prided itself on how good it was defensively showed up defensively. They made the substitution at the beginning of the game, Joe Mazzulla inserting Robert Williams into the lineup. That gave him a front court of Al Horford and Robert Williams. You get Horford, you know, guarding Joel Embiid while you take Robert Williams and go with the forward PJ Tucker. And defensively, the Celtics were great. I mean, absolutely great. But because the home crowd was starting to get into it, Philadelphia made their run in the second half. And when they did get to catch Boston, who had a 14-point lead in the second half, but then that whittled away, and the Sixers had a lead, I really thought Philadelphia was going to pull away. I thought they were going to find a way to pull away, but they didn't. Instead, what happened was, on the flip side of this, was that Jason Tatum, who couldn't hit anything and was really awful, started to get good, really good. He started to hit a lot of shots, needing just one to kick off a 14-3 run for the Celtics. And he had 11 points in the fourth quarter, and the Celtics go on to a 95-86 victory. Their defense was great. Their confidence is now back up. But Philadelphia knows how to win in Boston. They've done it before. They've done it twice already in this series, including Game 1 and the critical Game 5, which gave them a little bit of control before losing that control in Game 6 last night. So that Game 7 will be on Sunday, and the winner will get the winner of the Miami Heat-New York series. But the Phoenix Suns last night had a chance to extend their series to 7. And much like last year in their Game 7 against the Dallas Mavericks, they got blown out. Last year they lost to Dallas by 33 points, and last night they lose to Denver by 25. And it was a 25 that was just a coast for the Nuggets in the second half. Again, scoring 81 points in the first. Nikola Jokic had another triple-double. It was his third of the series. The Denver Nuggets are going to now get to chill out and wait. And this is the thing, that for everybody that has finally woken up to how good Denver is in the playoffs, and I don't blame you, they don't get a lot of national attention, and as many people are fans around the country of just their local team and who's ever coming in, they don't really pay attention to a lot of what's going on. They may even pay attention to just the conference. But Denver has been this good all year. The national media hasn't done a thing with them, and now they're in the playoffs in the Western Conference Finals, and now they're the betting favorites to win the whole thing. And they've got the best player in the playoffs right now. They've got the best team in the playoffs right now. Here's the thing about the Nuggets. They have lost three games in this postseason, and they have not struggled in any of them. They lost their first game in the first game of the playoffs. They lost. It was game four against Minnesota in the opening round. And that was in overtime. And that was we're up 3-0. Minnesota gave us everything that we can handle. And you know what? It was overtime. They did win, but we went home and closed the deal. They lost two games in Phoenix, both games 3 and 4. And it took a historic performance by Devin Booker and Kevin Durant to beat them in games in which they were in it until the very end. They have not collapsed. They have not had an awful game. They have not had a Mike Malone tear up the tape game. They are efficient. They are quick. They are loaded with talent all around Jokic. I mean, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had 17 points in the first quarter last night. First quarter. Jamal Murray had a good game. Obviously, Jokic had a good game. Bruce Brown was hitting threes. They are well balanced. They've got depth. They've got an intelligent head coach. And they've got the best player in the NBA. Now, is all lost for Phoenix? They acquired Kevin Durant in February. It was an 8-0 record with him in the lineup during the regular season. They dispatched a shorthanded Clippers team in five games, but they lost Chris Paul in this series. They did not have DeAndre Ayton, who had not been very effective in this series, but nevertheless, it's down yet another man. They lost DeAndre Ayton for game six last night, and they got blown out. They got blown out in a desperation game. Now, normally you would expect a team to put up a real serious fight when facing elimination, but there is something about pressure that can work both ways. Sometimes when you're not hitting shots and you press a little bit, you find that thing, you find something, and it helps kick in. Maybe we were going with plan A, but now we got to go with plan B. But a lot of times when you press, it leads to more and more and more mistakes. And you compound a miss with a turnover and a miss and a turnover. And before you know it, the deficit is so big, it'll take a monumental effort and a lot of luck to get back into it. And when you're down 30, you are not coming back in an NBA basketball game. That's it. And so the Jets, you know, you try your best to try to make something interesting. Maybe you cut the deficit a little bit, but you know what the other team is doing. They're not playing at the same level of intensity that got them to up to 30 points in the first place. The Nuggets weren't going to win this game by 50, 60 points, right? It becomes about taking minutes off the clock, not putting your team in a lot of stress. You got a 30-point lead. You take as much time as you can. You take it, you know, you pass the ball around. You don't go to the basket hard. You don't play more. You play less physical. It is about a conservative effort to get out of there okay, to get out of there healthy, because the lead you've built is currency that allows you to do that. Now, what that does is sometimes it allows a team a little hope that they're coming back. They've cut a 30-point deficit to, let's say, 22 or maybe even 19. But in reality, it's not going to be what you want. It's just too little too late. And that's what happened to the Suns. So a lot of injuries are the main reason why Phoenix lost this. But I think there is something to be said about chemistry. Now, believe me when I say this, I think that the Phoenix Suns are in good shape. They've got Kevin Durant. They can build around him. They gave up a lot for Kevin Durant, but you have to give up something to get a player of that quality. You don't get him for nothing, right? They had to give Brooklyn assets in order to get Kevin Durant in the first place. But now they have one of the premier players in the league paired up with Devin Booker, another premier player in the league, and they've got to build around those two. They've got to find a way to build around those two. I don't know what DeAndre Ayton's future is there, but this is an attractive place to go. And so if the Phoenix Suns management can work out bringing in the right free agents and the right pieces, this is going to be the start of something big. I will tell you, this is what the feeling was going into this series when Chris Paul was on the floor. I didn't know if they would beat Denver. Denver was really good. They, you know, Phoenix was favored because of what they'd done in the first round and what they were looking like with Kevin Durant. But the reality was this was a situation that is more built for next season and the season after than it was on a quick acquire Kevin Durant and slash win the title. So if you really pulled back, yeah, this is a very disappointing series in how a key injury and you just relied too much on guys that couldn't deliver being relied to that heavily. But the reality is this is a long-term play. This is a play where number of years down the road, the Phoenix Suns can be one of the dominating top teams in the Western Conference, especially when we know that Golden State is going to get broken up in some way after this season. They're not keeping that band together. But Denver has been around a while. Denver has been a team that people questioned because as good as they are in the regular season, the playoffs have been very disappointing. Again, they made the Western Conference Finals back in 2000 when we were in the bubble at Disney World, but they lost to Golden State. They lost to Phoenix. They lost playoff series in bad ways because they weren't healthy. And now they're healthy. They've got the pieces around them. Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray, all hurt in the playoffs in the past. And now they've got them rolling along. So I look at this series last night and I said, look, all right, I get it. Phoenix didn't lose to an 8 seed. Phoenix didn't lose to an up-and-coming team. Phoenix lost to the number one team in the Western Conference, a team that owned that number one spot for most of the season, a team that with a 2-time MVP, and you could make the argument, could have been a 3-time MVP. And clearly right now, the best player in the playoffs. But all is not lost for the Phoenix Suns. It stings to lose 2 deciding games by the margins in which they've lost. Last season, 33. Last night, 25. You want to see a fight when everything is on the line. You want to see the kitchen sink, you know, the proverbial kitchen sink sort of produce. And go down with the fight, not go down where fans are leaving the Footprint Center with boos, raining boos down, and a lackadaisical effort from a team that was trailing with, you know, it was an 80, giving up 81 points in the first half and trailing by 30. That's not what you want to see in a game where everything is on the line and everybody has to step up. But it can drain you emotionally. And I think they looked out of gas. Phoenix just looked out of gas. They didn't have their floor general. They relied on extraordinary efforts that you just can't count on time and time again. And in the end, Denver did not have to do that. Jokic doesn't need to score 50 points a night for this team to win. And they keep winning. We'll continue. But the NFL released its schedule yesterday, and we got thoughts on that as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and we continue. And glad you can be with us on a Friday as we can go into the weekend. Lakers and Golden State tonight. It'll be game 6 in L.A. Knicks and Heat as well as the Miami Heat are trying to end that series. And the Lakers trying to end that series as well. No concussion for Anthony Davis. Didn't think so, but you know, there was no protocol or anything like that.
I love the rumor circulating out there that they're hiding it.
Hiding a concussion?
Yeah. That their plan is that they're going to hide the concussion so he can play in game 6.
How do you hide a concussion?
I don't know, but at the same time, did it look like he got hit hard enough to be concussed?
Well, okay, why can't the answer to these people be simple? He just doesn't have a concussion.
Because he's Mr. Glass, I guess.
So
that if you sneeze on him, he'll be concussed.
Isn't that the way conspiracy theories always work?
Of course.
It's always like, no, the simple answer is he walked from point A to point B. No. The government had an underground tunnel, and they had a body double, and it appeared like he walked from point A to point B. But the government built an underground tunnel 3 years ago, and he was escorted through the tunnel to that point. That's how he got there.
He boarded that train to go 20 feet.
Wait a minute. But that's him in the video. But that's a lookalike. They found somebody that looked just like him, and they dressed him up. So
that was probably the most upsetting thing about DeMar Hamlin, was that, you know, everyone was saying, no, that's just a lookalike.
Yeah, that was a lookalike. Yeah, he really died, and really?
It's like, man, that guy was able to fool everybody.
Right. That was so silly. So, yeah, why can't the answer be he got hit? It was a little woozy, but there's no concussion. There's nothing to hide. He doesn't have one.
Why can't it be this? He got hit. He's a weak man.
Yes. He needed a wheelchair. He didn't come back out of the locker room, and then they go, yeah, nothing. It's good. He's all right.
That he was tired or I don't know. I mean, there's so many other reasons that it could have been. I go with the weak man theory just because the guy always gets hurt.
Who called him street clothes? Was it Charles Barkley? Who nicknamed him street clothes?
I think that's
a great nickname.
Yeah.
I'm going to give credit to Barkley because it sounds like something he would create.
I think it was Barkley.
Street Clothes. What a great name. What a great nickname. But, yeah, so no concussions.
So no concussion for getting tapped on the head.
He's probable for tonight's game. It's very likely he'll play.
Game time decision.
So, again, last night, Denver advancing to the Western Conference Finals. They looked magnificent. They are ready to win this whole
thing.
They are ready to win the whole thing.
That was a clinic.
Clinic. You want to do. My God, is Nikola Jokic. Why in the world is it that he just is not on the same level from the public's perception? And the people who know the NBA have given him two MVP awards.
Right. I think
but
it
he
has,
is not a superstar.
He's not a recognizable star. It has a lot to do with that. Denver's not a marquee team to watch.
I think that's the case. I mean, if you put his picture up against for just casual fans, they won't know who he is, right? And I'm not trying to equate him to LeBron, because LeBron's he's selling me everything on TV, right?
Yeah.
So my mother knows who LeBron James is, and she doesn't watch an ounce of basketball.
And deservedly so for LeBron, because I mean, he came in, came into the league as, with all the hype, and he lived up to all the hype. Jokic, I mean, no one really knows him.
Yeah. I mean, he can't be on the level of Curry or LeBron.
No.
They win championships and they sell his products. I mean, so he's not, that's another level. He's not at that another level. But he's not Joel Embiid. Like, that's the weird thing about this, right? I mean, he's not even Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid's never won anything either. So it's marketability. And again, I don't want to sound like Cry Me a River for Nikola Jokic. I mean, I'm not trying to be like, nobody knows who he is. But the Nuggets have gotten zero attention.
Listen, I think it's Denver and the Nuggets, because when Carmelo was a part of the team, Carmelo wasn't pushed in front of America.
Yeah, same thing. And it was hard because all the years that Melo was there, and gone to the playoffs, they were out quickly. And in the first round, you can't build a national brand by losing in the first round, because the first round is still a very local thing, right? The first round of the NBA playoffs are, they're on late for people on the East Coast. It's more local. You are on national TV, but it's not the same. When you get to the Western Conference Finals, they lay that out with the Eastern Conference Finals. Almost one is going to play one day, the other one's going to play the other day. You get the feeling of importance, the level of we're down to four teams. They all get their national attention. And when you can't get out of the first round, it's very hard to build a brand, because you're out of the first round in a blink of an eye. I mean, no one's going to remember the Minnesota Timberwolves or the Memphis Grizzlies of 2022 and 23, right? Their seasons are over and forgotten. And that's what happened to Carmelo and the Nuggets. They would lose in the first round so much that no matter how good Carmelo was, he just wasn't the case. Now, you can make the same case about the Nuggets, right? You can make the same case about the Nuggets that the one time they had playoff success was at a time nobody was watching. Those were abysmal ratings for the NBA bubble when it was in Orlando. They didn't get hardly anybody watched it. And then it was a second round exit to the Phoenix Suns in a 4-game sweep and a first round exit to Golden State the next year. So they weren't a good playoff team, and the playoffs are where they matter the most. I mean, we live in a world where you and I and people that listen to this show and people that we surround ourselves with, we're staying up until midnight watching games, right? We live in the central time zone. We're staying up till midnight watching these games. But Joe the accountant is not. Joe the accountant in Memphis, Nashville, Houston, Atlanta, he's not. He's like, I may watch an Eastern, the first game. I like the NBA, but I'm not staying up till, when I have to get up at 6 a.m., I'm not watching Lakers, Golden State. That gets done at midnight.
If you're living in Buffalo, anywhere on the East Coast, a 10 p.m. start time is horrible.
It's horrible.
Why would you even bother? At that point, I'd be like, I'm just going to watch the nightly news and go to bed. I'm not even going to invest myself in this game.
In games that really, I don't want to say they don't matter, but are you really? If you live in Buffalo and you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, are you staying up until 1 a.m. or 12:30 to watch game two of a series? You're not.
And
like,
I'll, give
unless
the
Nuggets, you're a diehard better or that's your team because you grew up in L.A. and you live in Western New York now. Like, we'll find all those examples. but the average NBA fan is not. But the Western and Eastern Conference Finals are done in a little bit different way, right? They're a little bit more isolated, and so you get more of a national audience. And the finals are built for the East Coast audience in the first place. You know, if they play Golden State games, we're starting at 5 o'clock because they had to be on by 8 o'clock Eastern time. You know, not whatever it was. So that's how you keep. That's the difficulty of cracking into the big mainstream. I mean, basketball people know who this guy is. Basketball people, again, have voted him twice in the MVP. Did you see Mark Jackson's ballot? Didn't even have Jokic on it. And how much hell he got for not putting him at least on the ballot? But it's impossible.
And it is kind of dumb.
It is. It is kind of stupid. It's like, was great.
It's like the two or three writers that didn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr.
Right.
Or Derek Jeter. It's like you had someone better in mind?
Yeah, I know. on a list of players, I mean, like, we don't care if you didn't vote him number one, but he wasn't even on the ballot. Wasn't even on his ballot.
Like, out of what? You put down, what, 10 names?
Yeah.
Exactly. He wasn't one of your 10?
And I'm telling you, America, this is your favorites to win the NBA Finals right now. This is their team. I don't know if they will. You know, you could run into something. The Lakers or Golden State could knock you out. Boston or whoever could give you a hard time. But I haven't seen the Nuggets struggle, have a terrible throwaway game at all in this series. They've been very efficient. They had to be beaten by Phoenix in two extraordinary, extraordinary performances at home. And they don't lose in Denver. They're going to have home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals, no matter who they play. I love it when people say, like, they'll likely be favorites. They are going to be favorites. What do you mean likely? Like, now they're saying they'll likely be favorites against whoever they play. What do you mean likely? They are going to be favorites. What are you talking about? They, no matter who they play, Golden State or the Lakers, they are the favorites in the Western Conference Finals. Please. They're the favorites to win the whole thing now, according to Vegas. Right? They're the betting favorite to win the whole thing. Of course they're going to be favorites to win the West. But last night was just... And again, I'm going to get in trouble for this. So please, all right, should I just save it? Because I might have to explain it. I feel like I'm running up against the clock. All right, I'm going to save it. I got a similar scenario, but I'm playing with sports fire. Okay? It's like in politics when you compare something to Hitler.
Yeah.
There was like, stay away from that.
Yeah, no.
They go, don't touch it. Don't touch it. And then in sports, we have our similar type of analogies where we go down a road and we compare something to some particular person or team. And they go, oh, don't do that. I'm going to do that, but you got to hear me out on it. You got to hear me out on it. Okay?
I'm waiting.
All right. We'll have that coming back. Because if I shut it down now, you'd go through the whole break going, he's insane.
Well, can I just say that, you know, this is all you, not me?
Oh, completely. Completely. Okay. No, I'm going down the road.
These opinions are your own. Yeah, they don't reflect the opinions of Wake Up Call.
Let me make it and explain. And I might convince you that I'm on to something. We'll come back.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right, so you can get your Tony, you're crazy tweets. Just start writing them now.
Yeah.
You'll just tweet them right now. Because I'm going to make a comparison to Phoenix that I'm going to go into an area that nobody ever likes to go through, especially in the NBA. I'm going to compare the Phoenix Suns to Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls.
Ooh.
I know, right? I know. You never do that.
I was thinking you were going to go, you know, Lakers of the 90s to Shaq when they were a terrible team. Or
I'm jumping right into the volcano.
Right after Shaq when all they had was Kobe.
Nope. I'm jumping right into the volcano.
Go right to the fire. All right.
So here's what happened to the Phoenix Suns. All right. So the Phoenix Suns in early February acquire Kevin Durant. And yes, they gave up depth, but they get Kevin Durant, one of the premier players in the league. And they went 8-0 when he was in the lineup. And they finished fourth in the Western Conference playoff standings. people loved him. People made him kind of the favorites of all the teams that were exciting to watch in the postseason. Phoenix was kind of high on everybody's list. Some people had him number one on the list. They went into the playoffs. They eliminated the LA Clippers in five games, but then lost in this series to six. And then the conversation immediately went, in less than 24 hours, it went to, what are the Phoenix Suns going to do to make this better? Like, look, the future is going to be bright. They've got Durant. There's going to be another offseason with him. It's all going to come together. Now, remember when Michael Jordan went to go play baseball? What happened to the Chicago Bulls? Well, they didn't make the finals in the two seasons that he played baseball. But there's a little caveat to those two seasons. The one season that they didn't have it, the last one, where the Houston Rockets beat the Orlando Magic, they did get Jordan back late in the season. And when they did get Jordan back late in the season, they started playing great again. They started playing well. Remember, Michael Jordan had 55 points in March against the Knicks, right? He was averaging 27 points in his return. And they started again coming together, starting to look like the Bulls. But what happened in the playoffs? Well, in the first round, they dispatched the Charlotte Hornets with no problems, but then lost in the second round to the Orlando Magic. Now, I'm not making the case that straight up, it's the same sort of playoff outcome, but that's what happened to the Bulls. The Bulls had something back that they were missing, and they were great with him, but it just wasn't good enough yet. It didn't quite come together as good as it should have been. And Shaq and the Orlando Magic beat them, and then they went on to the NBA Finals where they lost to the Houston Rockets. So when Jordan came out of retirement, they finished the season 47-35. With Jordan back in the lineup, they went 13-4. Now, that's not 8-0, but it's about 8-0. So with Kevin Durant, again, this wasn't Kevin Durant coming back to Phoenix, but much like Jordan being added to something that was all right, but not quite there, Durant was added to Phoenix. It was all right, but wasn't quite there. They went 8-0, a lot of promise, but when you get to the playoffs, it's a different thing. Even the great Michael Jordan couldn't just instantly come in to a familiar place and just take over and win a championship. He did need an offseason, a training camp, a full 82 games, and then the dynasty continued with three more championships. I think it was the reason I'm making this comparison, I think it was just too much to ask to have Kevin Durant arrive in this team in February and to think in the landmine that was the Western Conference to really expect that they would win the NBA championship the second he arrived in the Valley. I think this is much like what the Bulls did, which was, we've got the piece we wanted. He's back now. Let's get another full year under our belt. Let's get rolling and win. And I think this team, with the right additions and a little bit more health, again, Chris Paul is 38. He gets hurt in the playoffs. You're going to need to find an answer for that. I'm not saying you need to, you're not jettisoning Chris Paul, but you're going to have to anticipate. You cannot be left in a situation where you don't know who's going to run the offense when Chris Paul's not out there. Find a second facilitator. He may not be an all-star, but he's got to be a second facilitator because Kevin Booker does not need to have the ball in his hands that much. He needs a facilitator. He needed Chris Paul on the floor. And when you don't have him, anticipate you won't have him. So that's my comparison. Sometimes this happens in sports where a late addition, it's just not quite there yet. And so that's why I went with the Michael Jordan analogy from 1994-95.
Yeah. I might join the crazy train with you.
All right.
I could see where you're going with this.
Laid my case?
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it.
You can't compare Jordan to anything. That's the whole problem. No matter what.
And in fact, I mean, I told you the other day, we had to yell at a kid in the bullpen who was, you know, putting Jordan down like, you know, as number two, number three all time in the NBA.
You see it all the time on the talking head shows. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a tired argument, really. But I like I like your spin on it.
All right. Very good.
I enjoy your moxie there, kid.
I know, because you see it again on those shows where they go, I don't want to get in trouble. But it's very like Michael Jordan. Everybody goes, oh, what are you doing? No. I mean, it looked very briefly like Michael Jordan. People get so nervous. It's like, we're going to do that in golf.
And then they should.
And they should. They're going to do that in golf.
Yeah,
they'll
be
a young kid. Very Tiger Woods-like. What are you talking about? I mean, like, the one putt looked like Tiger Woods' putt.
Well, can Jordan Spieth be very Tiger Woods-like right now?
Yeah, right. Right.
We just don't want that Tiger to resurface.
No, we don't. Exactly. So that's my thought. I think that, again, if I'm a fan of the Suns, I'm disappointed in the way my team closed out the last two series. Yet last year, again, losing by 33 to Dallas in a must-win game. Losing by 25 to Denver in a must-win game. Circumstances are circumstances, but my God, that is just waving the towel as quickly as possible. I mean, that is literally like, well, we're done. And that's what it looked like in the second quarter of this game. Yeah. I mean, it looked like Phoenix's tank just went out. That was it. They missed a couple of shots and went, nope. This is out.
Yeah, it really did. I had that feeling of, like, you know, they collectively realized, you know, this isn't our night.
Yeah. Especially, and it's got to be demoralizing when you miss a bucket and then the Nuggets come down and it's pass, Jokic in the paint, pass, kick it out, Brown three, good.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God.
And not just these simple basic passes. I mean, it was right. Almost Harlem Globetrotter-esque from time
he's
to time.
He's throwing it. He's passing it behind his back.
No look.
Guy's just trailing the play.
I mean, bouncing it to him so it lands perfectly into his hand. I mean, some of the plays were just ridiculous.
And so you can almost see a demoralization coming over the Suns.
I wonder if that was a game plan, by the way.
We're out. We are finished.
Mark Malone.
Mike Malone.
I had it right the first time. Mike Malone. Did. I mean, if he drew it up that way and said, you know, guys, we're going to pull out the Harlem Globetrotter game plan tonight.
Right.
And just shut them down immediately.
Yeah. And they just, gas is completely out of the tank. Now you're running on fumes and now there's no light of a gas station.
And now they're kicking back, relaxing.
Yep.
Because who knows what happens tonight between Lakers Warriors. I mean, if that stupid corgi is right, then, you know, the Warriors win game 6 tonight and bring it back to San Francisco and just giving Nuggets more time to rest.
More time to relax and figure it all out. Exactly. So, I don't think all is lost for the Suns because, again, when you acquire one of the best players in the league, you just build around them and you see what happens. But you also don't want a Brooklyn situation, right? You also don't want to mess it up. Like Brooklyn, you feel like it's working. You got him and Devin Booker are working. Again, you have to have an answer for Chris Paul when he gets hurt. DeAndre Ayton's future is probably not good. But the reality is, if you can build the pieces around him, you've got a championship team. Denver has been doing this. I mean, I'm looking at the Nuggets. The Nuggets have been. This series. Let's pull back for a second. This series is rather unfair in this regard. The Suns. By having Kevin Durant, not a full year of chemistry, so meaning it was all good, and they didn't know how it would react when it was bad, because 8-0, you don't know where your adversity is coming from. It can't be this perfect, right? Something's got to break, and it did. Losing Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton in Game 6, relying too heavily on guys that don't normally get relied on, and they were trying to beat a team that, in all honesty, has been building to this point for a number of years. The Nuggets, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., and a lot of those, they've been playing together for a while. They just haven't been healthy. So it is almost unfair to think that a very shorthanded, even if you have Booker and Durant, Phoenix Suns was really going to beat a Nuggets team that was, hey, we've been really good, and now we're healthy and really good. Their problems were health, and now they're together. They've got tremendous – they know exactly who they are and what everybody's role is. It's a daunting test, and it's made more by the fact that your floor general had been out since Game 2, a game they could have won. So there's my analysis. All right, let's get to the NFL because schedule release holiday was yesterday. We'll talk about that next.
And Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. And Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue along on a good Friday to you. Yesterday, the NFL had another holiday. It was release day of the schedule. So everybody got their schedules. Everybody started going through them. We got Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com, on a Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today. Find out how we can save you hundreds on your car insurance. How are you, Josh?
I'm great.
When you've done this for years, what do you think is the biggest reason people are really excited about seeing something where they know the teams, they knew where it was going to be home or road, but why is the release day such a big deal to fans?
I think it's, you know, you map out what, you know, what the league thinks of your team, how your team is viewed in terms of the primetime games and the standalone games, and start to sort of think about, you know, if we have a young team, are we going to be overwhelmed at the start of the season and be playing for nothing in the second half when maybe some of our guys are starting to come around? Or if you're the 49ers or the Cardinals or teams, you know, with quarterbacks coming off of injuries, are we going to be able to weather the storm early and stay on late? And which, you know, I think it's just you sort of get a chance to start playing out the season in your head and saying, wow, that, you know, week 14, we've got this game and that could, you know, really decide our fate and things like that. I you know, I think it's the same as the draft. It's all about dreaming about what the future is going to bring.
The Detroit Lions got the date for Kansas City to open up the season. Was that surprising, or did we have a sense that they start to like the Lions a little bit and give them a little bit of respect to give them the opening game?
Yeah, you know, when you look at that Chiefs schedule, that team, most of their games are either primetime, standalone, or in that 4:25 Sunday afternoon slot where they're going to be nationally televised. So it's tough to pick out one where you're looking for. I mean, there were so many good opportunities, so many good matchups for games at Arrowhead. But I do think the Lions are coming into the season with a bunch of hype, and this is the NFL sort of introducing them to a wider group of people, because those of us in football have been following what's going on with Dan Campbell and obviously the last couple of years of growth in the Lions. But I think in terms of the larger, I don't love the word casual fan base, but less obsessive fan base, let's say, I think the introduction to the Lions is a great idea, because they could wind up being a division champ and contender in the NFC.
This schedule in as a whole sees doubleheaders on Monday Night Football. We've got a Black Friday game after Thanksgiving for the first time. Three games on Christmas Day, which is a Monday, and it's a holiday. What is it saying to you about the way the NFL wants to either A, spread this out, or B, put more games in primetime?
I think it's exactly what you said. They want as many standalone games as they can, because I think they know that means bigger ratings. When you don't have eight games going on at once, when you don't have, the Sunday afternoon where someone might say, well, you know, I'll stay home, I'll watch my team, but then I've got all this, you know, family obligations and other stuff. The more games that feel like events, the more games it feels like you can't miss as a viewer. And I think that's what the NFL wants, and I think, frankly, the NFL's partners in broadcasting want, and their partners in gambling want. I think that if you're trying to cultivate a culture where people are betting on NFL games, where things have become newly legal for sports gambling and so on and so forth, having one game to concentrate on and perhaps make bets during games and things like that is a big plus.
The international games, five of them. We go through this every time. I get this extension of the brand, but is there a long play here for the NFL? Do they want a European division? Everyone keeps wondering who's going to move to London, and I wonder if it would ever work out.
Well, I think there's a lot of logistics to work out, but I think the NFL does look at that as the biggest area of growth, and I think you see that with putting the Chiefs Dolphins game in Germany. That was going to be Tyreek Hill's return to Arrowhead Stadium. That was a marquee game on the schedule, and to put that game in Germany says we're really trying to blow things out over here. We're putting the Super Bowl champs, another playoff team. You know, we're used to sort of drowsy London games, and this year's schedule is a lot more appealing. You have that Bills-Jaguars game in London. You have that Chiefs-Dolphins game in Germany. Those games are going to be hard to miss after years of, you know, two bad teams being sent to London to play, you know, first thing in the morning.
Yeah, and that was the other part of the equation was the Jags getting two games in London. What's the larger story with that? Is there a circumstance that Shad Khan wants? Does the NFL want? Does London want? How is that triangle of interest allowed Jacksonville to stay there a full week and play two games over there?
Yeah, well, that's very much a Jaguars' interest. That this is going to be their 10th and 11th games in London. They've staked a claim to being the air quotes around home, but home team in London. And I think that's something that's obviously where Khan's background is. And so he has ties to London. Owns a soccer team over there. There's a lot of things that make the Jaguars want to stake that claim for themselves. I think that you may have a situation coming up where the Jacksonville mayors talked about the Jaguars needing to find somewhere else to play for a couple of years while they renovate their stadium. I would be surprised if multiple London games aren't a regular feature for the Jaguars, if that's the case. And as you move toward the possibility of a division over there, I don't think you can take anything off the table in terms of what the Jaguars' future might be in terms of a London-based or, you know, at least London-heavy schedule in the future.
As the Rams showed last year, you can go from Super Bowl champions to nothing. But that being said, was there a schedule that caught your eye that went, hey, that's going to be really tough for that team to start the season? Were there any schedules that popped out?
Well, you know, the Giants playing 7 of 10 on the road to start the season, it isn't ideal. But, you know, the flip side of that obviously is you get to play a lot of games at home in the end of the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, at a place where weather can be a factor and things can work out. I think the Jets, obviously the Aaron Rodgers part of it made the Jets such an appealing team for TV and stuff. But, you know, Bills, Cowboys, Patriots, Chiefs is a killer four-game stretch to start a season for a quarterback with a new team who, you know, you would think it's going to take some time to to get things together. I don't mean to make it just about the teams that play at MetLife Stadium,
sure.
But those two really, really jumped right out. And on the flip side, I was surprised that the Eagles aren't in more high-profile games early in the season coming off a Super Bowl appearance. And I think that's got to be a pretty good situation for a team that feels like they, you know, I'm sure feels like they're in every position to contend again this year. And, has a chance to sort of get their feet wet without too much pressure right off the bat.
All right, one final question. We're talking to Josh Alper, Pro Football Talk. I see other people who cover other sports. They say, I wish this, name the sport they cover, I wish they could do what the NFL does. They create these holidays. They have these big moments for even the smallest things like a schedule release. Is it safe to say that the NFL has responded to the fans, or have they thrown this on the fans? Because the draft is an example of the NFL just seeing where the wind was blowing with fan interest and going, we'll take it on the road and make it primetime. And the schedule release was the teams just used to put it on their website and then they went, oh, people seem to like that. Let's make a 2-hour show about that. Are they just responding to what fans are already doing in the first place?
I think to a degree. I think that, the draft is a funny one because they got forced to put it on the road one year because of conflicts with Radio City Music Hall in New York, and all of a sudden they realize these places are hungry for that kind of NFL event. You know, places like Kansas City and that aren't going to get Super Bowls. This is, you know, such a big deal for them, and it looks great for the NFL as opposed to just a bunch of sleepy people in the crowd,
right.
Waiting for the Jets to pick so they can boo, which was pretty much the way it went before that. And I think with the schedule, it is a less organic thing. It is clearly something the NFL, you know, but I think they notice. I think they see these, you know, fans and people on social media and stuff, and, you know, predicting what the schedule is going to be, predicting what the team's record is going to be, and it's really a chance to start whetting the appetites for, you know, for these games and especially these big primetime streaming games, you know, these things that the NFL really needs to do well. you just start beating the drum as soon as possible. And you know, we're going to, for months, be talking about that Chiefs-Lions game and what's going to happen. And that's what the NFL wants, absolutely.
Josh Alper, good stuff. Always love talking to you, my friend. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Have a great one.
You got it. Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com on a Progressive Guest Line. Hour 2 coming up next. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.